This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Hey, Carm Capriotto here. Thanks for listening to Remarkable Results Radio. And hey, binge on all the episodes on your favorite podcast listening app or on my Carm Capriotto YouTube page. We've got over 1,000 episodes and always covering the trending topics. Hey, don't hesitate to email me if you've got a trending topic that you'd like to have discussed or even you'd love to come on the podcast and share. Well, email me, carm@remarkableresults.biz, and connect. You know, there's nothing like hitting the record button and letting Bob Hype, Matt Fonslow, and Scott Manna have a wide-open discussion about the automotive industry. What does it take to really fix cars, and are we doing a good job of explaining it to our customers? How do other industries compare to ours, and should we really be using the term diagnosing when what we're really doing is performing tests and analyzing? My panel continues to advance the aftermarket with great talk that will make you think. Share this with a friend. Hey, thanks to Apex and Shopware for being partners and providing you this episode. You know, when you're working on cars, you want to be able to access your tools easily without hassle or clutter. Well, the same goes for managing your shop. Eliminate the clutter of paper repair orders with Shopware's digital shop management software. Talk to my friends at getshopware.com. You know, Apex knows the importance of the service professional, and last year they created a dedicated space at Apex, Repair Shop HQ. This is a one-stop shop for all your service and repair needs, including technical and management classes taught by the industry's most sought-after trainers. Listen here, right here, for registration information to come. Plan on it November 1st through the 3rd, 2022. Apex, now more than ever. I am totally in the dark. I just want you to know that. There is no agenda. No one has told me what they want to talk about. It is the scariest moment when I walk into a podcast with these three great guys here, and we're going to talk about practicing automotive. I mean, can you believe it's what we do each and every day? We practice and we keep getting better at it. So we're going to talk about that. Bob Hype is with me from MASS, Mobile Auto Solutions, lead technician manager. Has your title changed recently?
Director of Field Operations.
Oh, God, I love that title. That is super cool.
Like a double in salary.
And if not, let me be your agent. Based out of Chicago, 30 trucks in the mobile world. Good to have you back. We did 9 episodes together called Technician Talk, and we're actually moving on to something kind of brand new called Practicing the Automotive. Matt Fonslow's here. Hello, Matt.
I keep practicing, but I keep needing more practice.
Well, you're doing pretty good. Lead diagnostician, shop manager, Riverside Automotive, and the Matt Fonslow podcast, Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. So happy to have you in the network, my friend.
Let me back on.
Yeah, I know. And you're doing just an excellent job. Just an excellent job. Thank you. And Scott Manna. I've been trying to get Scott on so long, and it really took Bob and Matt to get Scott on the show. So thank you guys for convincing Scott to come on. He recently sold his shop. Am I right, Scott?
That is correct.
Yeah, back in October, sold it to a company that's got like 50 stores, went to work for them as training manager. They're so lucky to have you.
Oh, boy, I'm not sure.
Is he out of circulation, guys? Is it possible that we'll never see him at Vision again?
That's impossible.
I'll be there this year.
All right. Okay.
I was kind of thinking, though, the listeners have gotten a chance to get to know Bob, yourself, Carm, and me over the years, but they may not know much or as much as they should about Mr. Manna, Scott Manna. So I thought I got a couple of things I looked up. I have some Scott Manna facts, if you will.
Let me ask him one thing first. Do you still have the Corvette from the AC Delco Technician of the Millennium?
Yes, sir.
Attaboy.
Absolutely. Tucked away in the garage waiting for March.
Actively driving it, huh?
Oh, no. It never comes out.
What's this winter beater? Are you kidding?
I have my Silverado for that.
All right. So tell us, Matt. Tell us some unfound facts on Scott.
Scott Manna won the ASE Master Technician of the Year award twice, both in 2001 and 2009. But you may not have known that he's done something else twice. That is, he's counted to infinity. He also won the AC Delco, as you mentioned, the AC Delco Technician of the Millennium in 2006. Scott once diagnosed a car wrong. I got that wrong. I'm sorry. Scott told the client what was wrong with the car. The car made a mistake. So the next day, the car came back and fixed itself the way Scott said it should. Also, Scott doesn't own a scan tool. He decides what codes the vehicle has stored. Scott Manna does use a flashlight, but it's not because he can't see in the dark. It's because the dark is scared of Scott Manna. And then lastly, I'll tie it up. You've probably heard that the customer is always right, just not when they're around Scott Manna.
Matt, that was over the top. You're confusing me with you, I believe. I appreciate it. And just remember, Bob, the higher you go in the industry, the lower the money you make.
I must be at the top.
Getting a brand new toothbrush so I can clean your office bathroom. So let me know.
But Scott, do you know how many times your name was dropped in earlier podcasts with these guys?
I believe once by mistake.
Oh, I think you're light. Actually, Matt, in one of your recent Matt Fonslow A to Z, I think it wasn't it you and Justin just dropping Scott's name all the time?
I drop Scott's name all the time just so I can pick it back up.
Let's give our audience just one heck of a great episode here. Practicing the Automotive, Bob. I loved the title that you brought this. Where are we going to go with it?
How the majority of automotive world is expected to know everything and expected to know what's wrong with the car. While Scott and Matt might be able to know that right off the bat, the majority of the world has little clue. Why are we supposed to know everything there is on a platform that is probably changed and is currently changing more than anything else current to the world? And then I started thinking about doctors and lawyers, and what they do is they don't know, they practice. So they're constantly learning. So that was kind of the basis behind my thought process. And I thought that we could just maybe try and unpack that.
It never fails that we draw an analogy to healthcare or doctors all the time when it comes to diagnosing a car, the word testing, or the continuing education that's so necessary to keep up, and why we ignore the fact that, as you say, it changes each and every day, and the doctors need to keep up with medications and in treatment plans. COVID threw one heck of a wrench into all of that for everyone, and now we're talking science. Is there science inside of what we do?
There's definitely scientific methods to trying to figure out what is wrong when we're testing for problems.
Matt, you did an episode. It's amazing how you were talking about ohms and amps and Einstein and theory and science and physics and how it all related to what we're doing. I mean, I was really moved by that. And, you know, anyone who's on the outside that would have ever heard that episode, they'd have so much respect for what you guys do.
Yeah, I mean, there's physics in everything when it really gets down to it. Whatever you talk about, physics is involved. But I think uncredited for what we do, and I guess we've kind of done it to ourselves. We downplay a lot of what we do, primarily to our clientele and other clientele, meaning Shop B or Tech B worked on the car, and we kind of run them down, run them into the ground. And that's just something you don't find a whole lot in other professions and skilled in the medical field specifically, or legal field, like Bob.
Is that
mentioned.
Due to malpractice and they don't want anybody throwing them under the bus?
I mean, that could be.
Is it mutual respect for the schooling they went to, the title that they have, that it's super, super profession? Or to your point, Bob, I mean, who would have thought about that malpractice, right? If I came into my doctor and said, you know, I was sick, you weren't open, I went to this guy, he's a hack, he would never say anything negative about that person.
Probably not if it was at a legitimate medical facility or, you know, licensed practitioner.
If you're going to Tijuana, he might.
When you think about scientific practices, is there a relation to the automotive industry, especially in diagnostics? I would say that there is. You apply what you know, you design some type of a test, you analyze the test, you do similar things to what a scientist may do in a lab, but certainly as an industry in a whole, and especially over, you know, the long course of time, the automotive industry has perfected the art of undervaluing itself. We are very good at dumbing things down to a certain extent, to making it sound, you know, like cars are maintenance free and cars take care of themselves. And we have a hard time
making the consumer, the driver, understand what they're dealing with, what they're driving, the complexity involved, and the abilities of somebody that's going to figure out what's wrong with it to do that. You know, we just don't seem to be really good at promoting that and figuring out a way to get that message across. You know, unfortunately, that, of course, that's going to drive up the cost of ownership and the cost of repairing a car. But that has to happen in order to drive up salaries in the industry and in order to then bring in the type of talent necessary to do it. So, you know, if the automotive repair industry just keeps saying that, you know, well, we can do this for free and that for free, and we can read codes for free, and we can give you an idea of what's wrong with your car for free, you're just really shooting yourself in the foot as an industry to you know, advancing the industry, especially from a monetary standpoint.
I guess going back to the medical stuff, a lot of the breakthroughs make their lives easier. Not that every breakthrough that we have with vehicles always makes our life harder. Some cases it's easier. You could argue, you know, the old way of finding a misfire pre-OBD2 versus now, you know, is much easier on us. But you start introducing the network systems to our vehicles that make that increase the complexity. It makes it more difficult when you have a network issue. And ADAS was really kind of left field. We didn't really deal much with radar and cameras and all that. And I suppose to a degree, TPMS. In the medical field, when there's a breakthrough, usually it makes their life easier, whether it's a detection method or a discovery of what's really going on. Like if they ever figured out what really goes on with cancer, that would make the doctor's life easier because now they know how to, they can have a way to treat it, or they know what they're up against. You know, same with the COVID stuff. The more stuff comes out, the better they're prepared to treat it, either preemptive with a vaccine or somebody has it. The treatment methods have changed and evolved in that your chances of survival, if you're one of those that gets very ill, has gone up exponentially. That doesn't necessarily work out that way with us every time. And we're horrible about marketing it and explaining that. Not even just to the clients, to ourselves, to, you know, techs in the field.
I mean, you look at, if you're watching TV or something, you see commercials about the little kid walking out or chasing the ball out of the driveway and the car stopping by itself and all this. Not only the consumer, but I would say the majority of the technicians out in the field, there's a disconnect there of what does it take to understand that system and fix that system. It's not working on the 70s and 80s and 90s cars anymore. I mean, the cars have advanced so much. Nobody is really taking that mental leap with it. Unless you are in the forefront and practicing, going to classes of some form and talking to colleagues, you kind of just let that go and don't think about it too much, I think.
Matt or Bob, what do you think about accountability when you look at comparing professions, and especially since it's been brought up, the legal profession and the medical profession versus the automotive industry? What's the difference in accountability between those areas and between the people that work in it? You know, a lawyer versus a paralegal versus a secretary versus a doctor and a nurse and a medical technician to, you know, a shop owner and a service writer and a technician. I think there's a difference, and I think that there's that's something that could be worked on and hopefully help improve the image that's out there. You know,
and those
customers
fields
understand what a technician goes through to work on a car, what they found when they worked on a car, what they did. We're not really good at communicating what we do and what it takes to do what we do. And that's part of accountability, I guess. It starts in the bay and all the way up to the, you know, out to the front office of the consumer.
In those fields, there's channels within the profession to hold somebody accountable. And that's not to make it sound easy, because I'm sure there's creative license taken. I don't know if you saw that movie, Dr. Death. Okay, he's a neuromicrosurgeon who was doing kind of like spinal fusion type surgery, permanently injuring patients, resulted in the death of a few due to sheer incompetence. And there's some surgeons that were onto him. So they were trying to go through the channels to get his license revoked. And even at that, they could have got it revoked in maybe a certain state, but then he could bounce around. It was a really, really big deal to get this guy under wraps. For mechanics or technicians or shops, the accountability is, I mean, what a professional courtesy, I think. You know, I work on a car and blow the diag or screw up, you know, like something, I made a mistake on the installation, and then it's down at Bob's shop and Bob might call me up and say, hey, man, you know, I got this vehicle. It was at your shop. Here's some photos. Here's a video. What do you want to do to handle it? It's more of like a professional courtesy. There's no actual channels to take to hold somebody accountable for a mistake. Because if it goes outside of that professional courtesy and I go, it's not my fault, whatever. Now it's up to the client to take, or customer, vehicle owner, to take me to court.
Hey, Carm here. Coming up, a much talked about topic, the technician shortage. What is the compensation package for us compared to other industries? Repair Shop HQ was a resounding success at Apex, and it will get even bigger and better in 2022. This special area is for service professionals, your own place while at Apex. A one-stop shop for all your service and repair needs, including technical and management classes taught by the industry's most sought-after and experienced trainers. The important classes and instructors are selected by a panel of shop owners and technicians to be on target with what you need to drive your business forward. There will also be hands-on product demos in Joe's Garage, a simulated shop environment with 10 service bays, lifts, and running vehicles. Plus, you'll get to see new tools and equipment, the latest in management and marketing tools, and dedicated sections for tires, alternative fuels, diagnostics, and telematics. If you experienced Repair Shop HQ last year, you'll get even more in 2022. Listen here for the latest information on Apex, November 1st through the 3rd, 2022. Hey, for more information, visit AAPEXshow.com. You know, when you started in business, did you really think that cars would be driving themselves and that people would be buying cars online without even test driving them? Well, I don't think any of us did, and yet that's exactly what's going on. On the repair side, the auto industry is changing fast. Customers expect quick answers and proof that they need the repairs you recommend. They want to pay you while buying a coffee and then rate you on Yelp after picking up their keys. So why stay in the past? A shop owner named Carolyn asked herself the same question, so she created an online shop management system that automates the stuff you do over and over again. She and her team added texting and every step in the process from booking your appointments to posting that stellar review. They learn from their customers just like you learn from yours. And it's the system that's leading the industry into a bright future. Check it out at GetShopware.com. You're right, there's no accountability. The image of our industry suffers when people aren't happy with something, they take it to another shop, the other shop does something very unprofessional to describe potentially that the diagnosis was wrong or the shop was not competent. Something that's been creeping to the top of my mind, guys, ever since you've been talking about this was when we explain what we discovered to fix this problem car, Matt, when you have a customer and you say, hey, listen, when the Smiths come in, I got to talk to them. It was a great challenge. I want them to understand the stuff kind of happens to the cars. We have the technology to find it. It took us a little longer than expected. Blah, 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 blah. But are they just like, you're making my mind numb? I mean, doctors don't necessarily, you know, tell you all the stuff that they find in the test results. Just to say, we fixed this and we say, yes, I'll have another. We're always accepting of that doctor's prognosis or remedy to fix. Why does the consumer not respect, as you guys said, the complexity that we're dealing with today and the challenges? Do we need a script, an outline, a process to explain how we do this stuff?
I always go back to a class that I took a long time ago. The instructor said the English language is a very important language to use and said that we should never be diagnosing a car. We should be performing tests and charging to perform tests. A diagnosis is an absolute conclusion. We can perform tests and have conclusions that draw the testing to a certain element or component, but it's just one of those things that I think we don't think about this kind of a thing. And it was an eye-opening moment for me taking that and hearing that. As far as like what Matt was saying about the professional courtesy, maybe that's something they do in Minnesota.
down
where I'm at, I mean, I've seen many, many places. They just throw the other shop under the bus in a heartbeat and just like, I don't know what they were doing, thinking of trying to sell you that. And you didn't need that. And they're just ripping you off. You know, there are some shops and people with low integrity and they might be ripping people off. But generally, I've never really seen in my experience situations where shops contact another shop and say, hey, I know you just worked on this. I'm running into this issue, whatever. Years ago, I worked for a shop, and this was shortly after I bought my own Tech 2, and I was giddy to use it. I told the shop owner that I worked for, I think we should go to the other shops, tell them we have this equipment, and that if they need some sort of testing or something done that the specialized tool can do, they can bring it to us, we can take care of it. Everybody makes money. The only time I ever had a shop take me up on it, they towed a van over for a no start, and it was a G van. I opened the door, doghouse is off. Every ignition component that there is on a vehicle had been replaced. I turn the key on, there's no mill. I turn the key off, I open the hood, and I see a ECM under a brake boost or brake master cylinder soaking wet with brake fluid. Power. I go through my testing, but I'm at this car for 5-10 minutes tops. And I'm like, you need an ECM? And they're like, well, I needed all that other stuff anyway. I don't know. I didn't look at that stuff. I don't know what the old stuff looked like. It needs an ECM. Is there people out there that are working on cars that shouldn't be? Well, yeah. Are there doctors out there that shouldn't be working on people? Probably.
I'll never forget, Scott, someone saying to me about doctors, maybe you should ask your doctor what his scores were when he graduated from medical school. Was he a C, B, or an A? Because there's always a grade that you end up getting. And am I going to a top doctor or not? And what does that really mean once you get out in the real world and you make a commitment to be a perpetual student and always learn that? Hey, guys, let me just throw one wild thing. Usually if I don't write these things down and say them right away, they poof away. I was thinking about a new language. I remember having a show on with Bob Greenwood, rest his soul, as he was trying to come up with some new languages. And it's not a customer, it's a client. The top shops, they're all saying test, Bob. I think we could we have to agree that there's a lot of people that have accepted that, right? Matt, you're probably not saying we have to diagnose this car. You're probably saying we got to perform tests, right?
Try to use the word analyze. And I'm not correcting you. It's just that's what we do.
And again, I keep thinking about, wouldn't it be cool if we could put out this old way and new way, and the old way is putting down someone, and the new way is let's make it right. I mean, that just says, I'll own it. We'll commit to making it right for you, and just don't open your mouth anymore. Well, what happened at this other shop, ma'am? I really don't know. Maybe I'll call them and find out. We don't want to repeat anything that they've done. That could go a long way to anyone who's listening. If you're an individual who would put someone down, don't. Trust me, it hurts you too.
Yeah, I mean, no question. Call it what you will, you know, golden rule, or just, I think it's just logic. I don't want to set a precedence that makes it easier for the shops down the street to speak badly of me or throw me under the bus or not give me the opportunity to make something right. That if something comes into my shop and I find out, you know, that it's been there and they did this work, that I give them the opportunity without the client's involvement to work with me or whatever they want to do. Like, I want to put them in the best position to come out as positive as they can. And that usually ends up over time that if something leaves our shop not right and they catch it, then we're offered that same courtesy. But if we were the ones sitting there going like, oh God, they screwed you. They messed up. They don't know what they're doing. I don't know how they could have done this. Well, now if something happens, you know, 180 degrees and leaves our shop, they're not going to call us for nothing. we're trash.
Everybody has to understand that everybody makes mistakes, right? Everybody has a bad day. Kind of look at that as if that car comes in from another shop, did they do it maliciously or was it just they had a bad day and they missed something?
I've always tried to give the customer the option when they've had their car worked on somewhere else to go back. Although I've had customers that have given a shop one chance and only one chance and then kind of gave up on it. So whatever happened during that encounter, you know, I don't know. But usually it's when they've gone to another place. They've probably been back to the place that did something wrong the first time and just didn't feel that they corrected it. It's sound business practice, I guess I would say, to err on a side of, as Matt said, are they trying to do something malicious here or was there just mistakes made? Give the shop the benefit of the doubt. Another shop owner that I've known for many years had a great saying, and he always said, you know, when you raise the level of the lake, everybody's boat floats higher. You just have to, as an industry, and especially in this industry, we need more people that understand that and understand that, you know, the way to advance the industry, the way to get, you know, to solve the problem of technician shortages is to put a better spin on what's going on in this industry, how difficult it is. You know, there's a lot of people that want to do it right. Trust me. The motto of the company that I'm working for is be nice, fix cars. That's what they've said at every sales, you know, at every meeting I've been at. That's the goal. You know, be nice to people, treat them right and fix their car and everything will be fine. You know, the industry will take care of itself. And just, you know, on the other side of it, I know from some management training that's been out there, one thing that I wanted to say in the conversation earlier was that we are in an amazingly time sensitive industry where everybody's in a hurry. Everybody from the customer all the way down to everybody in the shop, we're all in a hurry and we all need to kind of step back and take a little bit of time. And I think the best thing that any shop could do is spend more time presenting the vehicle back to the customer when a sale is completed. Spend the time to explain what was done, what was seen on the car. That's kind of where I was going with the accountability side to say, here's what my technician did. Here's the test that he performed. Here's some of the results of those tests. This is the process that we go through in order to do this so that we don't make mistakes and we don't put the wrong parts on the car. We never have enough time to do that. We never spend enough time doing that. And that's just the way this world is. Nowadays, you know, well, COVID made it really bad. You don't even get to see the customer anymore. The customer picks up the car after hours and pays with a credit card over the phone. You never get that chance in the last year and a half to really spend time with a customer and say, but that has to happen. You know, this is what we did to your car. And this is why it costs what it cost to complete the repair that we did and to get people more at ease. It's not necessarily that the people are not wanting to spend the money. They just want to know that what they spent their money on was worth it.
Do you think digital vehicle inspections help with that, though?
Absolutely. I think that's going
to
help.
Kind of get it to the forefront before the end.
And it's amazing how many aren't doing DVI. Is it going to come back, guys, post-COVID, when we get back to whatever normal would be as we live with COVID forever? Are people going to come in and pick up their cars, or have we just trained them? Because, as you said, Scott, we don't have enough time. Just put the keys in the lockbox.
I suspect it's going to be age-dependent. The younger generation probably less apt to come at a certain time to pick up their vehicle. The older, whatever that means, they're going to want that interaction again. That's how they built trust with you to begin with, was seeing you, talking to you, interacting with you, placing some judgment on the visuals of everything. You know, that's not going to change just because of a couple years of, you know, lockdowns and mandates.
Bob, I got to tell you, practicing the automotive, this is it's a beautiful topic for this. And I love all where we're going. Scott, back to you. You said something very profound and something I think we have to listen to and own, and that is being able to tell the customer what we really did without over talking above their heads, right? So go back to post-COVID and in your shop, as you would, you know, if it wasn't you, it was your counter people or a technician. Was there training that we had to have in order to complete the sale, you know, in the way you talk about it? And what can we learn from that? Can you share?
Oh my gosh, there's tons of sales training out there. There's companies, you know, consulting companies that their entire business is service advisor training, service manager training. Absolutely, there's a huge amount of that. There's the challenge of finding employees or having people that are good listeners.
Assume that the trainers are going to help with that. What's the reaction to the customer having we've explained it to that depth? Do they want to hear that?
Absolutely. I would say absolutely. Some of the young female customers that came into my shop were fascinated with some of the things you told them and were very interested in hearing what it was all about. I have cases where I spent more time explaining the testing that was done on the car and explaining what was wrong with the car than it actually took to fix the car. Sometimes you look at that as not necessarily a good thing from a profitability standpoint because you call it unbilled time. You know, how do I bill for that time? Unfortunately, you can't. It comes from elevating the industry. We spent 100 years getting to where we are right now. We're not going to fix it in a year. It's going to take a long time. It's going to take a change in mindset for shop owners and technicians to understand what needs to be done to just elevate this industry, to put it where it really should be. Are we going to be on the level of doctors and lawyers? I don't know. I don't think so. I know what all the jokes are in the industry, and I have to go on record to say I don't necessarily agree with them. You could probably get into the industry. Many of us did with little to no formal education. You could be have mechanical aptitude and work in a shop, start doing grunt work, cleaning up, and watch what's going on and progress and kind of learn some of the basic fundamentals and have an entire career, spend 30 years fixing cars and have very little formal education. I don't think you can do that and practice, if you want to call it law, or practice medicine. There is a minimum standard of education that these guys meet. The flip side of that, there's a lot of very well-educated automotive technicians out there. There are people that have left other industries and went into automotive repair who were highly educated and just fascinated by it. You know, they understood how high-tech it was. So it's going to take time. It's going to take time to change that, but it's certainly worthwhile. But, you know, being a shop owner, I saw the divide between what was going on in my shop versus what the customer's perception is. It's different what the customer wants than what it is we actually provide. But, you know, the customer wants a diagnosis. The customer wants to know unequivocally, how many times have we heard, you're sure this is going to fix my car? This is going to fix it, right? When you put this mass airflow sensor on, when you put this body control computer in the car, it's going to fix it, right? What does that immediately do to the technician or the guy talking on the phone? Well, we believe it's going to. Unfortunately, sometimes there's no way to answer that question. Even from the engineers that designed the car, they say, perform these tests and then replace with a known good part to see if that's going to fix it. So we're all stuck with that, as well as the medical profession. You sure this drug that I'm going to take is going to fix this problem? No, I'm not 100% sure. We got to try it. But open lines of communication, making the person understand, just eases the anxiety of paying. You know, I guess my point is to just spend a little bit more time getting people to understand, you know, what they're paying for and what you've done for them in order to charge them for that money.
What do you mean it's not going to fix it? You're not sure.
Like the medical field specifically, that they do something and have done something that we've maybe only very, very recently started doing. And I would say only a small segment of the profession is doing it. And that's documentation. They document. You know, I don't know if you've stuck around after an appointment or drug your feet out the door. The doctor is usually firing up either a computer or even their cell phones using like a dictation app. And they rattle off, you know, 2-3 minutes of information. And it gets documented. And it's documented. We're only kind of starting to really do it seriously with ADOS. You could maybe argue to a degree DVIs some documentation, but I mean ADOS, companies like Mass, Bob's probably should be talking about this rather than me, but the level of documentation they do is, I think, for the most part, unheard of until, you know, very recently. So I kick it over to Bob. He can tell you about that.
some of that is the stuff is so new, there's liability behind it, and you want to make sure that you're doing it correctly. It's not just about covering your butt. It's about making sure you've got documentation so that if something does go wrong, you can go back and look at it and say, okay, where was I? What did I do here? What were the readings? How was the setup? All of that. And if you don't have that, I mean, how do you learn from your mistake, I guess? There's no data on a data stream in a scan tool. It works and it doesn't work type of a thing to some extent. It depends on the manufacturer and depends on the system. Some of the stuff, you can get some scan data. You have the scan tool involved in the calibration of a radar or something. You have data before and after it in the scan tool, but you might not have any data driving down the road.
Boy, Matt, I'm glad you said that word documentation, because that's what I meant when I was talking about accountability, especially on the technician side. We weren't really trained to do that. We work on cars, we work with our hands, we work with our minds. We weren't really brought up to say, you know, cover your tracks, write down what you find, kind of the scientific process that I was talking about. We haven't, as a whole, as an industry, really thought about doing that. And the more you do that, of course, the better everything becomes. The easier it is to say, no, you know, we did this. You're able to document, that was the right word, document what you did. We're notoriously bad at doing that. You know, of course, both of you have had a little bit of experience in the mobile work. I know so many mobile technicians, and every one of them will say the same thing. They go to shops and nobody even knows what's going on with the car that they're called in to look at. They're lucky if they know the correct year, make, and model of the car. They have no documentation of the original customer complaint, of the original codes that were seen on the car before a guy pressed erase on the scan tool. They have no documentation whatsoever. So, of course, what does that do to the mobile guy's job? It makes it harder. Everything becomes harder. It becomes harder to assemble the puzzle and get the pieces to fit together. And companies are doing that with DVI. 100%, I think that's going to improve things. It's going to help things. And technicians just have to learn to get better at documenting what they do as they go through their processes on a car. Did you torque that bolt? It's a critical bolt that has to be torqued to the correct specification. Did you do that? How do you document that? You know, and again, all of this is going to take time. It's going to take time to work into the daily thread of what we do. It's not going to happen overnight, but it will elevate the industry if it's done.
I got a couple of wild thoughts here. Number one, you're not describing a top shop, are you? no one knows that the left hand is talking to the right hand.
Average shop.
All right, an average shop. And if you're listening and you feel that you just fit into that description that Scott has, pick it up a notch or two.
I think when you're talking about that top shop versus average shop, how do you define those? I can remember when I first met Matt. I met Scott shortly thereafter, and I thought myself as an average tech. And they're like, no. You might think yourself as an average shop, and you're in the top 20% of shops type of a thing. Trying to find that bar is all I'm saying. I don't know what average is today.
I was thinking too, others that were decent at documentation were instructors, specifically like professional technical trainers, where Scott builds a case study, not just one. I mean, he has, you know, probably hundreds and hundreds, if not thousands, up to this point, but they would document. And that's almost like a scientific method type thing, where part of the scientific method is putting it up against scrutiny. And it's not so much presenting it to the class and having somebody in the back going like, no, that's wrong. I don't mean that kind of scrutiny. I mean, I watched you present a case study on how you diagnosed this issue with this test technique, this tool, this equipment, this theory, working theory in your head. And I watched that. And then I go back to my shop, and that's where the scrutiny comes in. I try to take that theory that I saw you use and put it into practice. And does it work? Yes or no? That's very scientific method. Like, that's what makes the scientific method powerful, is I come up with a, you know, hypothesis, it evolves into a theory and it gets put to the test. The purpose of the other scientists is to try to disprove your idea, not maybe with malintent or anything like that, but that's the idea. And that's kind of what some of the training classes are like, that here's this idea, you know, this is how I approach this issue. And we could take that and twist it just a little bit and present that to our clients. You know, we kind of get into this dichotomy with the shops, with production. Things are structured in such a way that if the techs aren't billing out, you know, a certain percentage over the hours worked, the shop's not doing so hot. And now we might ask them to slow down a bit, you know, quote unquote, slow down, to take photos, to take videos, to jot down, write down, type down, voice to text, whatever, torqued these critical bolts, this procedure, did this. Right now, everything's pretty vague, you know, what we did. R&R engine. Just assume.
Exactly.
So the client, you know, a car owner, that's what they see. They say R&I or R&R engine and a price. Nothing with, like, and what did I
that's
actually
across
do?
The board. That's not like, I mean, you go to a dealership and they're that bad.
Matt, you just mentioned voice to text, which is exactly what I was thinking of. Matt, you're big on journaling. I get it, maybe personal journaling. But if you think, Scott, Bob, Matt, if we were able to document into the work order or into a space inside of this work order, all the things that were going on, for example, Matt, you've got your voice to text going. It doesn't type until you open your mouth. You say, I just torqued this too. I got the torque specs. I did this. And you walk down the pathway of all the things that you were doing. When it comes to the service advisor helping the customer understand what happened to the car, many of the items, if we were talked to text, because who wants to stop and type? You know, I did this to the vehicle. We tested that. You know, it read this. How much quicker it would be. So here it is. I believe the tech is there to do that. Are the business practices there to fully document?
I don't even want to guess what the percentages would be. I think that, unfortunately, there's probably a lot of shops, and a lot, again, well, I don't know what that number is, absolutely have the capability, don't know it. Kind of like scan tool stuff. You know, I think it's almost like a Western philosophy type thing where we're typically poor at long-term thinking. So they're not thinking down the road in what would we have to do? What changes would we have to make to be able to integrate this into our system? Because voice to text or the dictation type apps are inexpensive and they're getting to be very, very good. Google text is actually pretty darn good. There's Dragonfire? Is that the other one? And then I think Apple dictation? I don't use any iOS stuff, but they do really, really well. And you can tailor them to your voice, and you know, you could hook people up with a little bit of equipment, or they can use their own phones, a little bit of equipment for shop noise, you know, like a microphone of some sort to help with that.
I could see a wireless microphone, so you're not attached to anything, but it is linked to, you know, like Google Text or inside of a space in the work order. So you have all the freedom to move around and just speak what you're observing, what you know that we need to know if the car ever comes back. Think about the whole comeback journey here, if that ever happens.
And if you're truly paperless, the invoices don't have to be 15 pages long. It's going to be on one page and collapsed. And then they can expand if they want to read the novel. In saying that, a lot of times when we say, I typed a novel, that's got some negative connotations to it. And it's not. It's really detailed.
I'll never forget a technician. Matt, it could have been you. Who knows? We've done over 40 podcasts together where the tech says, please write a novel to the service advisor. Please write a novel. The customer came in and described, you know, in two or three paragraphs what was going on with their car, what they heard, what they saw, what they felt. And they wrote down, check left rear wheel. The owner pretty much nailed it if the technician had a chance to hear it or read it.
I worked for a guy that would give me sheets that would say find leak.
You're under the car, can't find a leak, and then
is it an air leak? Is it a water leak? Does it have color to the leak? I mean, it was just, I mean, I'd literally go, you don't have any more information?
It was liquid
dropping. In front of the car, back of the car?
It was liquid dripping out of the tailpipe.
So, I mean, it exists. I mean, and honestly, I've been there where I've not given enough information when I've given a ticket to a service writer to sell or something like that. And we can all get lazy. It's just trying to figure out how to put our best foot forward and owning it when we don't.
Yeah, it's a challenge. There's no doubt about it. It's not a simple thing to fix this, but it certainly has to be worked on. And it's sometimes maybe a job dependent type of an issue that we're talking about, where documentation is obviously more critical and more important to have. Certainly ADOS would top the list in automotive service. And, you know, when you say, where's the liability from, you know, why is there liability? The liability is not that there's going to be something wrong with the car. It's that if something goes wrong, the person driving the car could get hurt. And that's what scares the shop.
But it's worse than that. Like, I'm trying to tell the shops that we deal with, you want to fix the car right. If the car's fixed wrong, the person driving the car could be injured. But what about the person that's in the oncoming traffic or next to them or whatever? I said, there's all sorts of people that can be involved in some form of collision because this stuff isn't done right. And until everybody gets awareness of all of that, it's just going to continue to be this living in ignorance.
So what does it take to make a profound change like that? 100 years, Scott?
I certainly hope not. Awareness, obviously. Look at what's happening to the restaurant industry right now. They're simply getting pounded. They can't find help. Businesses are closing left and right. So when that level of pain hits the automotive repair industry, it will prompt changes. It will start to prompt changes. It will require businesses to charge more so that they can run a more efficient business, get more education, demand more from the employees that work for them. It's just all a trickle-down type of a thing. It's going to take some time. It's going to be accelerated if things get worse. Certainly technology is pushing, the direction that we're going in. Guys wouldn't be doing what they're doing if ADOS never got put on a car. They wouldn't be worrying about documenting things, but they are, So now you have a guy that a mobile guy comes in and he flashes a car and he takes his phone out and he takes pictures of his screen, of his laptop, saying, programming completed successfully. He's documenting it. He's making sure that, when I was done and I left, this was done right. Now that's going to start to roll into, I guess, some of the jobs that take place every day in a shop. It would be nice if a shop had the ability to, be able to guarantee that their lube tech didn't leave that oil plug loose and hence the thing fell out and the engine blew up in the car and the shop's on the hook for a car. But that's hard to do unless you're going to mount a GoPro on every guy working on a car and record what he does all day. They do it on police, but I don't think it's going to ever happen to a tech. But hearings for so long how this technician shortage is such a problem and how are we going to fix it? And of course, the fix is always going to be what you can compensate them for, what the compensation package is. We're going to lose technicians to so many other industries that offer so much more, and they're not getting, they're pulling the same person away. If a forklift company can pay a guy, twice as much as what he's making at a shop, plus give him time off and a 401k, the shops are going to have to wake up to that and figure out that, boy, I'm going to have to elevate my game. I'm going to have to clean up my shop, make it more presentable, make customers happier to come here, explain to the customers what I'm doing, and hold my technicians accountable. It's all going to be something that all kind of rolls together, I guess, into trying to fix the problem.
We just don't have the precedent set.
Well, the forklift company knew how to make money so that they could afford to hire the right talent, Scott, to your point.
The competition level is also considerably less.
In the value of what they're working on, that's problematic when comparing to medical or the big industrial stuff. not justifying it. It's just a hurdle we have to overcome. I just don't think that as a profession, we've quite got a grasp on being a credence good profession or trade or service provider, that we know better of the quality of work put into the repair than you do even after you get the car back and go drive around, because, you know, shop A could have just did a pad slap on rotors that are maybe not warped, but way under spec. Car stops just fine. Or you could have went to shop B where they did, you know, pads and rotors and we'll just say calipers, because we'll just assume for the discussion that it was justifiable. One costs a fraction of the other, but the car behaves, at least in the customer's eyes, the same. They have no way to determine which was the better service provided. And we haven't really come to grips with that. And then, like the restaurant profession or restaurant industry, you have levels. Bob comes up here and I can take him to an Applebee's for a steak. But I go visit Bob and we end up at, you know, Morton's.
Thank you, Bob. Look, we're all coming.
There's a difference on the invoice. there's a big difference. Morton's, they don't hesitate in charging you what they're charging you. They justify it.
And they give you a good customer experience. They're probably paying their waiters a decent wage. Their chefs, you know, front of house, back out. The business model is so different. A high rent district, oh, by the way, right? But it doesn't mean, even if we're in a medium rent district in our shops today, that we can't put our absolute best foot forward, learn how to make some money, and retain our people. And, you know, one of the things I had written down earlier, and I don't know where it basically fits here, is, but we just need, what determines a top shop, Scott? I think we were talking about that. I said, the top shop is a place people want to come to work at. That may be a top shop, a designation for it. You know, Scott, I'm sure you didn't have a problem ever finding great talent.
No. I actually didn't have, I was very fortunate in the time, no. Very, very little turnover. You know, when I sold the business, the two guys that stayed on and continued to work, one was working with me for 27 years, the other one about 17. I have friends who own shops that go through help. I don't even know how they do it. It's something that I would have probably shot myself if I had that level of problems. So I don't know if it's being fortunate, or I don't know if it's having a work environment that suited these, the people that I brought in. But I was very fortunate to have that over the course of time that I ran my shop. So I didn't really, I've never experienced the pain of technician shortage that some of these shops go through. And they go through it all the time. It's like a nonstop thing. And of course, you know, good shops, this small percentage of shops that Bob is very familiar with, that he goes to, they're high level. They have a well set procedure. Everything's done right. There's to an average shop, the good shop is overstaffed. You know, how could they have that many people? How could there be three or four service writers and then an office secretary, two porters, eight technicians? How is that even possible? And yet the place is doing just fine, making money. So it is possible. You know, business training is going to be required at a lot of shops. And over time, you know, you're going to see, I don't know, maybe corporations are going to move in, certainly like Ditech is, and elevate the bar. Just the way there's no more mom and pop pharmacies anymore. These small shops run by, you know, three generations of people might just end up not being able to survive, not being able to make the change. Who knows? I don't know.
No hardware stores. There's a few bakeries out there that are surviving, but not enough, because every big supermarket has a bakery. And who knows? Maybe every supermarket will have a shop, Matt, someday.
Scott had to weather a few like Anchorman level brawls outside his shop for the honor of being able to clean the shop floor and organize his tools.
I wish.
Hey, guys, I'd love to create a series around this, because this was fun. I think there was an awful lot to take away. If you're an average shop, think about some of the things that were said. If you're a top shop, these guys are speaking your language. I love where this went. I think there was, you know, like five or six really key, great talking points. Bob Hype from Mobile Auto Solutions. Did you say Director of Field Services?
Director of Field Operations.
Bob, thanks so much. Appreciate it, Matt. Riverside Automotive, the Matt Fonslow podcast. Thanks a lot. It's Scott Manna. Wow, your first time. We broke the ice, baby.
Well, Carm, thanks for having me. It was an honor to be here with you. Certainly, I don't know if I'm worthy to be with Bob and Matt. They are top level. And I just want to thank you for what you're doing for the industry and getting these things out there. It's great to be a part of, and I appreciate the opportunity to be here. Thank you.
Anytime you got something on your chest, baby, you come on and you can burn it right here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Carm.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.